Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good afternoon. I'd like to welcome you to On Point with me, Don Allen, and my co-host in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how's it going today?
I can't complain from this seat, if you will, Don. We can't control it anyways. It's a sultry kind of overcast day here in the chat room. By the way, we're just getting breaking news coming in out of Afghanistan. 30 Americans killed in a – and let us pick up
– we're part of the same unit that killed Osama bin Laden.
Absolutely, Don. What we
are you hearing that, Don, Alan?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
On this mission, 22 of them, Don, were U.S. Navy SEALs, many from the same unit, not the same men. They've run a check. None of the bin Laden SEALs were on this helicopter, but many from the same unit. This is one of the most elite commando units.
Wow, that's interesting. I imagine what we'll be told, Don, on this, you've got it tuned in now. CNN reporting, I imagine we'll be told that the helicopter had mechanical problems as opposed to either they were shot down in the air or were killed in ground-to-ground combat. But this is not good. These are some of America's elitist.
Yes, these are the top special forces, the Rangers, the Airborne Rangers out of Fort Bragg and Seattle, 9th Infantry Division. And some of the best trained operatives in the military. But Mr. Edwards, I remember a couple of years ago, I'm sure we had talked about this, and just talking about this disaster here in Afghanistan. When you hear on the news that a chopper went down, in this case 30 UFGS troops die, 30 troops are dead now,
and you
don't hear the explanation, and they say, well, it's fog or bad weather. For me being in the service, being in the Army, that's not true. Nine times out of ten, they've been shot down out of the air by the enemy, period.
So. Absolutely. Yes. And so we want to put that out there for our listening audience here, domestically and worldwide. The Defense Department, the Pentagon, announcing 30, and we've switched over to shortwave reports out of the Middle East, or in this case, Central Asia, indicates that this was a firefight. President already is attempting to talk in terms of extraordinary and exemplary actions and bravery and et cetera, but there's something not right about this one. This, by the way, was close to the so-called disputed region on the border with Afghan and Pakistan. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the coming hours. This comes at a bad time, and we apologize to our audience, but we are committed as journalists to break in when news flashes or breaking news like this comes. But we start out by saying that late last night, Standard & Poor's, the leading regulator in the sense of setting the ratings for the stability of a country economically for the first time in history, and this was first put in place in 1941, Mr. Allen. Standard & Poor's has now downgraded the United States to AA+, which just in that regards will cost the United States billions of dollars in investment, increase penalties, and et cetera. It'll be interesting. We would suggest to many in our listening audience that you probably want to watch late tomorrow night, Sunday, to watch the Asian markets, which will open around probably 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock a.m. You then want to watch the European markets. Now, Don, what has happened in the last 14 hours since Standard & Poor's did their downgrade? The Chinese, who, by the way, you know, people don't like to admit that the little yellow man has progressed tremendously. The Chinese hold $1.2 trillion of American debt. $1.2 trillion. The Chinese, in a release from Beijing, indicated that the United States needed to begin to live within their means. I mean, who would have thought? Bill Bull would have never thought 30 years, 50 years ago that the little yellow man would be dictating to a white Christian nation. But the Chinese have indicated that they are extremely concerned about the economic stability of the United States. They are extremely concerned about the ability legislatively of the United States to meet a problem, to deal with the problem, to deal with the magnitude of the problem, and that based on that, that the United States is becoming a nation which is not a good investment. Now, you got to understand, Mr. Allen, as I know you do, and in Studio B, that this is the kind of situation that brought nations like Greece and Spain and others to the bottom of the pool. Let me also do this. I think you're looking at the same thing on the screen. Do you realize that right now as we speak, the nation of Luxembourg and the small country called Isle of Man has a better financial rating than the United States of America?
Yeah, that's incredible, Mr. Edwards. And you know, a press release came out early last week, too, that said that Apple has more money than the United States. Apple computers,
yes,
iPads,
yes.
iPhone, cash.
Yes,
fluid
yes.
Cash.
Yes, cash
yeah.
money. Yeah. Apple. It's just, it stunned me when I heard it. And that's the reason they needed to do the debt ceiling so the United States can print more currency. But, you know, I think we said on a program last year that one had to be concerned if the United States had the what we call the solid assets, in other words, gold and silver, to support the currency. I don't know, Mr. Allen, what's your thinking on that?
I don't think it has anything really to do with what's going on. And I'm looking at some different news items here. Also, it's like already the Republican Party has jumped out and blamed Obama for this.
Yes.
which I find kind of interesting because he's been president for almost 3 years, 2.5 years,
almost,
whatever
right.
it's been in.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. And I find that really highly unusual to the point where there's a press conference being held right now, and if I can get to it when it starts, the GOP presidential hopeful, Ken Valente, our governor, Mr. Edwards, said
oh, they want to put up $5.1 billion in debt
yes.
and fled the state? Gotcha.
Yes.
Same Ken
Valente.
Yeah.
And he's getting ready to do a press conference. He's down in Iowa, and he's talking about, how Obama, put us into this. And I just find it very interesting, so.
Michelle Bachmann, released a press statement about 5 hours ago saying that the president should fire Timothy Geithen, the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, I'm not necessarily opposed to that based on the fact that he's the president's chief economic advisor, per se. But if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it Michelle Bachmann and Rand Paul and all the other Tea Party fanatics who said we don't have to rush to a decision, we can take our time, and that President Barack Obama is a doomsday predictor because nothing negative will happen if we decide not to pass this legislation? Wasn't that the same Michelle Bachmann of the 6th Congressional District out of St. Cloud and north of us? Is that the same Michelle Bachmann?
That is the same Michelle Bachmann. You're absolutely right.
Now
Michelle.
She's saying,
absolutely.
Well, is she prepared to relinquish her congressional seat because she couldn't read a tea leaf? I mean, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I find that very interesting.
I would be very concerned with respect to what the intentions of the Chinese. Let me give you an example. If the Chinese decide early Monday morning, late Sunday night, if you will, to dump, if you will, significant amounts of American debt onto the market at what are called bargain basement prices, we could really be in trouble here.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be the United States of China, or it could be the United States of Apple. They have the cash, more cash in the U.S. So, I mean, you're looking at this, Mr. Edwards, and you're seeing some things happening here that's very significant because the way that everything is headed, you're looking at astronomical numbers like 50% unemployment possible, a 90%
yep.
crash in the stock market, and an inflation at 100%. And so
yes,
with those 100% items,
yes. Mm-hmm.
It's right there, Mr. Edwards. It's right there in front of us. And I think that it's time, you know, that we pay more, a little bit more close attention to this. And I don't have any solutions to this. I really do. I can't blame President Obama. I can't blame George Bush. And I just, maybe we need to get people in there that are citizen politics, politicians into the career. But
well, I got to tell you, Mr. Allen, I can blame George Bush, and I have to blame, in some respects, President Barack Obama for some aspects. And those aspects are that my position is the president should have gone after jobs in 2009 as opposed to Medicare and universal health assistance. And the reason is, it doesn't make any difference what kind of medical plan you have. If you don't have a job, doesn't make any difference. You can't afford the policy. And I said it on other programs and in my columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. I thought it was a bad move. This president had promised to move an agenda which put Americans back to work. And by the way, Don, whatever jobs program comes in, black folk ain't going to get no jobs.
Well, last on the list.
Last hired, first fired. Yeah,
exactly.
And that is what is so sad. But let me ask you this question: we had talked earlier in the week. Were you able to make any contact with the Council on Black Minnesotans and to see what their recommendations will be to the governor on jobs here in Minnesota?
Mr. Edwards, I left several messages from the time we talked and electronic transmissions to the Council on Black Minnesota and Mr. Lester Collins. And also to Governor Mark Payton's office, because I wasn't getting any answers from the Council on Black Minnesotans. The executive director, Lester Collins, did not call back. And I asked about, you know, what is the job program look like after August 22nd when the 150 estimated kids get ready to go back to school? When are the career jobs going to come into the infrastructure for not only the people of color, but for the whole community, because it builds the whole community and the community's infrastructure. And like I said in the beginning, Ms. Harris, I have not got any information back, any phone calls. I did invite them, including Governor Mark Payton and Lester Collins, to call into the show today, and no response.
Now, can we assume that the Black legislative delegation in the House and the Senate will be having public updates, public briefings, public hearings, as Representatives Hayden and Bobby Joe Champion did in 2010 when they were talking about how we were going to get light rail, except we couldn't talk about the jobs, which we talked about in the summer of 2010. Can we expect, do you have anything there in front of you on the screen that indicates any series of meetings at UROC or Sabathany or the Urban League?
At this time, Mr. Edwards, it is a whispering campaign. There is talk about a meeting, and I think they're kind of gun-shy at this point because between UI, the Minneapolis Mirror, and a couple other folks, I don't think they want to have another dog and pony show with no substance to it. Let me ask this question.
I'm looking at Intel and have been in discussion since early this morning. I'm understanding that here locally, even in Minnesota, as an outgrowth of the stock market collapse, 527 points down and just a marginal gain yesterday, I understand that our foundations have lost anywhere from 2 to 5% of their economic base. That indicates that they will have to do more with less. And the word is through the Philanthropic Association or the Association of Philanthropic that just here in Minnesota that they've lost as we speak 2 to 5% of their assets. Your thinking on what that will mean as it pertains to, let's say, the tornado relief efforts. By the way, have they gotten that money yet?
Mr. Edwards, we have a whole segment getting ready to come up on that. That's going to blow you away.
Is that right? Okay.
I have some real-time stuff that just didn't happen, you know, 2 weeks ago. Okay?
Okay.
Really. And so we want to say that for our listening audience. But to answer your question, Mr. Edwards, I think that we're, as a community, now in Minneapolis, we're talking Minneapolis, and specifically I guess we could pinpoint North Minneapolis, but as a community, we have to stay away from relying on these foundations, because losing 2 to 5%, you know, you're talking millions of dollars right there.
That's right. That's right.
And so, and so people will have to work with what they have, like you said, do what you have. But then again, Mr. Edwards, you have agencies out there like the Northwest Area Foundation, the St. Paul Foundation, and one of their missions is to solve poverty. But to me, if you're going to solve poverty, you're going to come on the scene, I want to know what date you're going to close and what date poverty in North Minneapolis or Minneapolis or state of Minnesota in general is going to be solved, and you close your doors and go on to another mission. Because
okay,
right now, you know, you, they're getting millions of money dollars pumped in from the federal government under those pretenses. So I think it's a devastating thing that, you know, they're going to lose 2 to 5% of their it would be net worth, if I'm not mistaken.
You know, the way the foundations are actually able to function is that they make investments. Contrary to what people may think, foundations don't get money, they don't have the kind of assets just based on the fact that some philanthropist leaves them $6 or $7 million. Their big portfolios, and that's what, how they identify them, are predicated upon good investments. And I'll give
you
an example. In 2008, the five leading foundations in Minnesota lost a little over $177 million. And, in fact, I think you posted something on that back in the day. We talked about it on our website and on our TV and programs. About $177 million. In fact, I think they were led by the McKnight Foundation, who lost $75 million out of their portfolio in 2008. And, in fact, it was a story in the Star Tribune, had to be the very latter part of 2008, because everybody was wringing their hands because the foundations were telling people, we're going to have to cut back. We're going to have to cut back substantially. Also, the United Way will take some hits because they do a little bit of investment, but the foundations, the structure, if you will, of those foundations are their investment portfolios.
Yes, and that's very interesting that you should say that, Mr. Edwards, because, you know, time and time again, we've talked, and even live on air, we have gone through 990s, IRS 990s of local nonprofits that, you know, had anywhere up to $10 million, and then going into the next year with $2 or $3 million. And I guess my question would be, or my statement would be, you know, how come our agencies aren't investing like that? How come we're relying on, like, the Minneapolis Foundation, McKnight Foundation,
well,
and others?
Well, one of the reasons is that they haven't been given the right guidance, and then, unfortunately, in Black America, we have not been given the encouragement to understand and study investments, if you will, with the exception, Mr. Allen, and the data is right there on your computer, if you will, with the exception of Negro colleges, our institutions don't invest, if you will, and that's one of the great tragedies that we're faced with. And so then that goes back to your previous question, why do we depend on other entities, in this case foundations, corporate, and et cetera? Because we've never been encouraged, because we've never been able to enjoy that part of the economic pie of America. We've never really had the liquidity, to do investments, other than our colleges, if you will. In fact, I don't know that we have a significant Black philanthropic organization anywhere in America. And, you know, you and I talked about this, particularly given your personal religious background and familiarity with the church. You know, the Black church, in some respects, has had a lot of money go through their fingers that they should have been about the business of investments, if you will, but have chosen not to do it. And so your question, sir, is well put. Here we are, and we're dependent on how things shake out by noon Monday with respect to the foundations and the people that our nonprofits are dependent upon. It's a shame, man. It's really a shame.
It's a very rotten shame. I mean, I just look around, Mr. Edwards, and I see all this, you know, from looking at the factual data and then following the money, if you can sometimes. You know, I just wonder, I said, well, why isn't there a group of government, a governmental group, and for those international and listeners here, we're talking kind of about Minneapolis, especially, more importantly, North Minneapolis. There is no governmental agency that is supposed to function like, well, that should function in an effort to be with cordial diplomatic relationships to the state capital, to the city of Minneapolis, the city of St. Paul, and
but,
catch
but John,
things
I,
as
I,
they come.
I, let me just cut you off. But we, as a younger man, I fought for and was a part of the political machine that fought for the creation of such a mechanism, and it's called the Council on Black Minnesotans.
Well, oh, yeah, that's my second thing I was going to come to. Not once have we seen members of the Council of Black Minnesotans at the table, or the executive director, I'm putting it like that, of the Council of Black Minnesotans, or some of the board members at the tornado meetings, the tornado relief meetings. Not once have we seen a press conference called on behalf of the victims in North Minneapolis and from the Council on Black Minnesotans. Not once have we seen a press conference called when a young man is gunned down in the street by the Minneapolis police, by the Council of Black Minnesotans. Not once have we seen a press conference called when we get a statement released from the Minnesota Department of Transportation saying that black contractors, one black contractor, got $715 out of $68 million. They have said absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So they need to sunset. They need to sunset immediately.
Well, we need to ask for the governor's assistance. And my sense is that there is a specific person that we need to personally talk to, you and I as black bloggers. We need to ask that Mr. Collins, not his representative, not some proxy, that both Mr. Collins and the new chairman or chairperson come on these programs and be prepared to spend a half hour with us to make us understand how they can help the governor develop a plan to put African Americans to work. See, the problem is, Don, no one wants to address, given the small number of African Americans, with the exception of the Dakotas, and in fact, even Nebraska has almost a larger black population than Minnesota because of the large black population in Omaha and to a lesser degree Lincoln. But we need to ask the governor's assistance in at least making the Council on Black Minnesotans indicate to us what are their recommendations. Let me give you just an example to our listening audience of where I'm coming from as a commentator, but a longtime activist. Based on the fight that went on with the debt ceiling, based on the legislative package that was finally passed, which I think is a disaster for the middle class and for poor people, and particularly people of color in this country, based on what happened on Thursday with the stock market dropping, losing almost a third of its base, losing 527 points, if you will, based on the fact that it was really not able to rebound on Friday. And now based on the fact that late last night, early this morning, the Standard & Poor reduced America's bond rating, Moody & Finch, the second bond rating entity in the world, under pressure to do the same thing, and they may very well do it after the markets open and close on Monday. I would be in my office right now, Mr. Allen, if I were the leadership and the staff of the Council on Black Minnesotans. I'd be in my offices right now putting together, first of all, a memo to the governor, a memo to the leadership of both the House and the Senate, if you will, and be preparing to test the waters with whatever their constituency base is of advisors and et cetera as it pertains to the jobs, okay? That's what I would be doing right now, all right? You and I know that nothing close to that is happening. But now that's what leadership is all about.
Yes.
By the way, we haven't given the number. We're not closing the phone lines and under any circumstance. If you could, just give the number. Phone lines are open.
Sure.
You know, if anybody's interested, let's see what.
Yeah, just call. The number is 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. And the number is posted in the chat room. Please give us a call, ask a question. You have to be from Minnesota because this is happening to people all around the country. And so we'd like to hear get your input. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, it's very interesting getting back I mean, you struck a nerve and a bell in my head on that Council of Black Minnesotans, because I got to tell you about another group. I walked in on Friday, Mr. Edwards, to the It was Thursday the 4th. I walked into the National Association of Minority Contractors meeting.
Oh, my God. You didn't let me know, Mr. Allen. They met without sending out notice once again, huh? Where did they meet this time?
They met in the same place in Heritage Park in a little community center there, right off Olson Highway and Bryant. Right across Kitty Corner from Summit Academy. I walked in, and they had Abe from MnDOT there. They had Tim Kennedy from MEDA, Minneapolis Economic Development Association. They have a young lady, her name slips me right now, who's the executive director of Do Nothing. And I walked in, and I was shocked at just a little crowd of black contractors I saw there. And they had some big fanfare getting ready to go with people were coming in from MnDOT to talk to them and from these other agencies. And it just made me wonder. I mean, I got sick to my stomach, Mr. Edwards, sitting there listening to this executive director, this woman, just smiling and grinning like everything's okay. And everything is not okay for the minority contractors. I just wondered. You know, I have a call into the national president of the National Association of Minority Contractors because I need to ask him point blank, what are you doing? This is not just going on in Minnesota. It's happening in Atlanta, New York, Denver, Detroit especially. I mean, Detroit, you could buy Detroit right now for $2 if you want to. You know, if you want to go move there, they're giving property away for people to come there and start businesses. Okay, and so we're headed that direction, the direction of a Detroit. Or actually a direction of right outside of Denver, there's a place called Cherry Creek.
Yeah, it's
comparable to Edina, I would say. Areas like North Minneapolis, you know, I think they're trying to get gentrification and get all that stuff going. So it looks like when you drive out of Minneapolis, when you drive out of Denver, you hit Cherry Creek if you go our north, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you drive out of downtown Minneapolis, you head north, you'll hit this beautiful North Minneapolis. You won't see African Americans, Hispanics, and Asians walking down the street. You won't see the street commerce. It was really funny. Mr. Edwards got my hair cut on Broadway the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, people are hurting. You know, people are broke. And this is the second time, because I remember I told you the first time, Mr. Edwards, when I walked down the street and I had to walk a block up, and like six or seven people asked me for a dollar, you know, and I just, wow. And so I walked into the barbershop, and right outside before I walked into the barbershop, this guy says, could you use some laundry soap? I said, well, what kind do you have? Because he's obviously, you know, a street merchant, you know, marketing, and I asked him a question, and he pulled out two big bottles of Orange Tide. Now, mind you, it was over 100 degrees that day. I don't know where he was hiding it at. He had a T-shirt on, but he pulled out two big bottles of Tide. And it was, I don't use that brand of Tide because, I just don't use that brand. So I told him. But shoot, he walked two more steps down and was able to sell those, I think they were like $22 a piece. He sold both of them for $15
a piece. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I asked him, he didn't tell me where he got it from. It's actually none of my business. But people are resorting, when they get desperate times, people do desperate things. And if you get to the ground level, because the mayor's not at the ground level, the governor's not at the ground level, I can't even say Don Samuels is at ground level. Because if you're walking down those streets, you're seeing, especially in North Minneapolis, and you're like today, I drove around, and we have a mutual friend, Mr. Tucker. I went by his house so he could visit with my son today. And I was shocked at all the trees still tipped over. And the sidewalk broken.
And
I asked Mr. Tucker, I said, Mr. Tucker, what's going on? And he says, well, the city said they're broke. They don't have any money to remove the trees. And then early, I made a phone call to this young lady, Ms. Edwards, that lives over on Sheridan, a little bit further up. She told me that the city's telling her now that the Department of Forestry is supposed to get involved. So I find that very interesting.
Well, this comes at a troubling time for the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis, because yesterday the Minneapolis City Council invoked a provision. The city of Minneapolis will all non-union personnel will have to begin September 1st to work a four-day week and take a 20% pay cut. I repeat that. It sounds like the Urban League. To a four-day work week and a 20% pay cut, which will be increased in 2012, sometime in the middle of 2012 or at the end of the fiscal year, which in the case of City of Minneapolis is June. So in some respects, they probably were telling the truth. I cannot understand how the City of Minneapolis is broke when you talk in terms of the amounts of contracts that they've given out for work that sometimes can't be found, if you will, like a $25 million contract to R.T. Ryback's cousin, a couple years ago, which was supposed to come up in the election of 2009, but never did. But be advised that the council, Minneapolis City Council yesterday, nothing in the paper this morning that indicated that was in fact official. That is official. By the way, on just another note, while we're on this about, you know, good government, good management, Moody and Finch had put the city of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, on the hit list to be downgraded. The article in this morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, now they kind of wrote about that because Michael Opat, the chairman of the county board, was incensed and enraged because Moody and Finch did not give them prior notice. Moody and Finch said, well, we did. We started reviewing over 177 municipalities, counties, and states, if you will, for the purpose of downgrading. So I have to tell you, with respect to what has happened with respect to Standard & Poor in taking the entire federal government's bond rating down, that there will probably be a philosophical change and policy change by Moody and Finch. And I think you can look forward to Hennepin County losing its bond rating. And I think it's clear that Minneapolis is in the process of continuing to be downgraded. Okay, I think Minneapolis at best right now is at a double A minus rating. They could go as low as A. These are serious situations because I'm trying to figure out, irrespective, and by the way, the president will be on a bus tour in the Midwest on the week of the 15th. He'll be here, by the way, Don, on the 30th. He will be in the Twin Cities for an American Legion convention. I just don't know where the plan is for jobs for Americans, and I sure don't know where the plan is for jobs for African Americans. And right now, by the way, the priority will be for veterans. I think that you understand that as a veteran, the disability, yes, if you will. I was shocked to hear the figures that are now coming out that over 1 million Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are unemployed. That is dangerous, Don.
That's very dangerous because they're coming back. You know, Mr. Harris, I just went out to the Fort Snelling, the Bishop Whipple, Henry Whipple building out there, to talk with a veteran service officer who was very candid with me because I'm trying to find out. I found out there was about 3,500 homeless veterans in the city in the metro area in the different counties. And
right,
I said that's a real problem. And
yes, it is.
But what she told me was that normally it would be the Vietnam vets and the older Vietnam, you know, the older cats.
I hear where you're coming. I know what you're getting ready to say.
Okay.
Go ahead, my friend.
It's the Operation Desert Storm vets. It's the vets that aren't even 30 years old yet, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
That are out there in the streets. And so she said it's a wide range of veterans. And speaking on the health care, a large percent of these guys come back with PTSD, some form of depression. They have the highest divorce rate right now in the country among veterans that have served and come back. I mean, talking about domestic violence is off the charts among veterans that have been serving over there. Not all of them, but it's enough to, you know, let's look at this. Let's find out what's going on here. And
special programs at bases in North Carolina, Colorado, and where you formerly served in Washington State. because of the domestic violence and the suicides. But like I said, I was shocked. If you would have asked me, I would have come up with a conservative number of maybe 150, 200,000 vets, maybe. I saw an interview with an American, with an Afghan vet, who's been back a year. He's a Bronze Star winner. I mean, the man won the Bronze Star, okay? Can't find a job, okay? Now, one of the things that I hear, one of the undercurrents, is that people are beginning to say that the reason for this is all of these immigrants and people who have never put anything into the system that are draining the system. And that's dangerous, man. That's real dangerous.
Yeah, that's very dangerous. I know a lot of veterans, too.
Let's hear if folks have any observations, any thinking.
Sure.
There are some serious issues out there right now.
Yep, 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. Maybe we get someone in the chat room to give us a call.
Understand that... there are a number of events that are allegedly coming up with respect to the tornado victims. and where is that money going and how will it be accounted for?
I've checked on quite a few events here in the last two or three weeks, Mr. Edwards, and one of the common threads, which things are either a fluke or a wobble. And I was thinking that it would be a fluke, but it's kind of wobbling, and it's wobbling in the direction of that. Everybody that I talked to out of the 7 documented telephone calls that I made and recorded on my video, just in case anybody says, no, you didn't make those calls, I have them somewhere safe. Every one of those people said they did not make any money, that they barely broke even. And so there was no awards to the victims of the tornado in North Carolina.
I know of the event at the State Theater in which the house was packed. I mean,
and
I understood that the Black Music Awards, our friend Pete Rhodes and them, indicated that they were making a donation, but there was an event before that at the State Theater, and I think there was another one at the Pantages, in which the house was packed. You mean people are actually telling you, because that's a responsibility I know that you asked to take on. I don't feel that you've been getting a lot of support from Louis King and them, but... You had said you would try to follow the money. You're saying that
Yes. People
are saying they haven't made any money off all these events
yeah.
I see going on?
Well, the event at the State Theater, that's a guy, I mean, he was cool, Mr. Edwards. He talked to me. He says, I'm not giving the money to the Minneapolis Foundation or the Northside Community Response Team. I'm going out on the street, and they did make a little money on the State Theater thing. But what he did is he went out on the street, and he distributed his money. This is what he told me. Now, I have yet to see any documents or who received the money or anything like that, but that's what he told me. There was a thing with KRS-One down at the First Avenue. Which
well, they
was,
say
you know,
they
lost,
was,
go
ahead, go ahead. I'll let you tell it because you're the man that's been investigating it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they said that, you know, they didn't get anything. I mean, they barely broke even. I know that. On a conservative rate, KRS-One, even though I don't think he has anything new out, at a conservative cost for him would probably be $6,000. And that would be just to get him off the airplane in Minneapolis. That doesn't cover hotel, limo, and
well,
food
well,
and all
I
that.
I can't understand Peter Kerr saying that because my understanding is that a check for $3,000 was written and given to him after all expenses. Now, why are people?
Yes.
Why are people doing this? I mean, why are they telling these kinds of stories?
It's
wow. It's
a bust of hustle. It's a hustle bust, you know, is what I call it, because you have events coming up, and I'm glad you mentioned this, Mr. Edwards, because you, again, rung the bell in my head again. Next week sometime, I don't have a flyer in front of me. I don't have nothing in front of me that explains this. The Pillsbury United Communities and Minneapolis Public Schools are supposed to be putting on an open house. And like I said, it has something to do with the tornado victims. It has something to do with United Pillsbury Community. And I'm actually going to look for this email, Mr. Edwards, while I'm in the other studio here and we're talking, because I was severely shocked, to tell you the truth, because I don't understand. I'm going to pull it up. Oh, it's not there, so it must be here. Let me just check here.
So they're having an open house. I mean, what is the purpose of the open house? To introduce a fashion line or a new series of programs? I mean, they're not having an open house to pat themselves on the back on how well they have done in coordinating relief for the tornado victims, are they? I mean, I know that no one's going to do that. Are they?
Well, I'm just going to read you the email, Mr. Edwards.
Okay.
This is from the president and CEO of Pillsbury United Communities. I had shot off an email and I said, why are you guys planning events? This is the Human Needs Committee, right? Mm-hmm. Got the email back. It says, Don, Jovan forwarded your concerns relating to community open house. The plans for the open house were well underway before the Communications Committee was formally established. At a later time, it would be well worth it to discuss how we can work together on NCRT events, on events in which NCRT committees partners on. I have touched base with Anika, and she will be following up with a communication request in the next few days. So what that says to me, Mr. Edwards, and I have to interpret that the best way I know how. I mean, I did go to Minneapolis Public Schools when they worked, so I got to take credit for that. But they're having some sort of open house. It's very vague because the details are not in there about where, when, who, what, why, and all the rest of the stuff. And so I'm still wondering how the victims of the tornado fit in. You know, how does this all wrap around? I mean, we're used in our community, Mr. Edwards, to seeing these dog and pony shows, and, you know, someone might get a grant for $3.2 million and show off their computer lab that no one uses. And that's just it.
Well, let me ask this question here, Don, for transparency. They don't intend. I hope that people don't do this. They don't intend in this event that they're having at the Metrodome on the 20th. They don't intend to bring victims up on the stage and make them testify to how good We Care and these other groups have been. They don't intend to denigrate these victims by doing that, do they? Please tell me that that's not the intention to do that, to have this activity at the Metrodome and actually make victims come up on the stage who maybe they've given a couple dollars to. A couple ministers gave some people $50 here, $100. I mean, they don't intend to, and I repeat this word, make these folks denigrate themselves by saying, they helped us, these people helped us, and they gave us a water and helped us get some light shades. They don't intend to do that, do they?
I think it's going to be very interesting to see how it pans out. And Mr. Edwards, on that note, you know, we've been on the ground since May 23rd, 2011, following this tornado stuff. I mean, right up closer to the Star Tribune, closer to the TV stations, and kind of on the inner circle. We see things that are just really screwed up in process, okay?
Uh-huh.
And I want to play something that was taken by Jacob Wheeler in the update. Actually, his name is Jacob Wheeler, and the update, and he posted this on August 4th. And from a Northside resident, her name is Joyce. The title is, I'm Sure I Need It Worse Than You Because I Have Nothing.
Okay, go ahead.
Here we go. Okay?
We don't have problems. We don't have AIDS. We have nothing.
Clothing.
Yeah. We have nothing.
What? Who is the
on July, and I'm supposed to get taken in. That's taking a while, too, because they said it's a three-week process for the background check to come back. You know, I went on the internet when they were talking about the shutdown, and they showed you so many people that got a paycheck that if some didn't, but they had a whole list of the senators and the representatives they got a paycheck. So what make is you think it's okay for you to get a paycheck, but I couldn't put my daycare check invoice in because daycare was shut down. So what make it is okay for you to get your check, and I'm sure I need it worse than you because I have nothing. I done went to meetings. I went to the meeting up at North High School where they were supposed to give us resources or whatever. It seemed like everything they tell us, don't nobody know about it. It don't exist. You know, the lady did tell me about the Section 8, and that seemed like that's coming together. But it's like they tell us a bunch of stuff, but when you go to these places to ask them about what they're talking about, they don't know what they're talking about. I just thank the Lord that me and my kids or my brother didn't get hurt, and everything else we can get back. But we can't get no lives back, so I'm thankful for that.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, that was a Joyce, a resident in North Minneapolis, from the Uptake.
That sounded like actually two or three different victims, all African Americans. Now, what troubles me is that when there has been an attempt in the presence of the Recovery Committee, Louis King and others have browbeat these people and attacked them. And, of course, there is a very infamous video in which has an outgrowth of the journalist who captured it. If I'm not mistaken, she has been declared persona non grata, and she has been ordered and, in fact, has not been allowed to bring her camera or any recording device because she recorded Louis King viciously, verbally attacking an African-American woman in her late 50s. And, in fact, his infamous, famous statement was, "We're not here to put money in your pocket." Now, this group that you've just played, I mean, clearly they've gone out and gotten, because that was more than one person speaking. That was at least three different individuals.
That's
a sad commentary.
Yeah. I just wanted to interject in there. That was the same lady. She was so distraught that I think they had to come back a couple times and film her. So that's why it sounded like, you know, some different people, But that was the same lady. But, you know, speaking of, it seems like the women of the North Side are coming forward. And there's one video that didn't get much play, but it's still out there. And I think we played it on this show before, Mr. Edwards. I would just like, it just will solidify the first video that we played with, or the first audio that I played with Joyce over there. So if I can, real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Dressed in outfit. I do have a granddaughter, and I'm not going to put my granddaughter through these things. All I'm asking for is we are home to stay, and we are a good place to eat. But you know what? Since I'm coming from the country, I'm wired in that. But I knew in your life to be so close to each other. So now, it is tour. I've been here since the 60s. I grew up here in this building. I remember when it was the drugstore, Payless, Red House, with wash machines, where we washed all day, not saying right there in the matter of right. So all this mess going on with the state of Henry County, they're full because they ain't never done nothing like this a day in my life. And it hurts me. It hurts me to badly see my black people like this. And the only one left for me is Jesus. And Red Cross, I thank you, and I thank you a lot, because I grew up there too. A lot of us got responsibilities. We ain't the only one got responsibilities. And I'm trying to figure out where is all this money going. It can't go to the victims.
Amen.
Yeah. And nobody better than one. Now, what if someone
go, Mr. Edwards. Where is that money at?
Yeah. And so some quality of the recording is leaving a lot to be desired. You could clearly hear as where the money was.
Yeah.
I will remember this African-American woman, who, by the way, she is a lifelong resident and was born and raised in the old projects, the so-called Glenwood projects. And but what bothered me in that meeting, Mr. Allen, and she's like the fourth or fifth person that made that kind of declaration, I've been troubled by the demeanor and the body language of the whites and some Negroes in the meeting who later indicated disdain for these people coming in and bothering us, quote unquote, with these statements. And so I have to say, though, for the purpose of clarity, is that, and you also have been confronted with this, I asked the question of the Minneapolis Foundation about these things and have the recording of the message that was left for me, where I was told that the Minneapolis Foundation is quite comfortable with everything that's going on, and it does not audit, nor does it ask for clarity with respect to how the money's being spent, which kind of tells me that, you know, the Minneapolis Foundation and others are quite comfortable with the abuse and disrespect that has been shown, particularly to African-American tornado victims. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
Yes, I'm bothered
by that.
Yes, it is, Mr. Edwards, and we have a call.
Let's get it.
Okay. Hello, you're live on the air. Madison's calling.
It's me, Terry from the Minneapolis Mirror.
Hey, what's happening, Terry from the Minneapolis Mirror? Thanks for calling in.
Well,
you guys, how you doing?
Good. The reason I'm calling is because while you played that first one from the uptake,
yeah,
of that victim, the
yeah,
audio, the first audio
yeah,
you played from the uptake.
Yes.
Well, the uptake is doing this thing called the Northside Project. And what you should have kind of brought to the table, too, so I'll bring it to the listeners' attention, is that they also have a separate video in there of how the NCRT group is working together. And they have
the mayor stating
how they've, because some of the people at the table at the NCRT group have been ones that have been up in the mayor's face many, numerous times, and Councilmember Samuels, et cetera, and you have Mayor R.T. Rybak saying on this video that the uptake did, that we can put our baggage behind us and work together.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question, Mr. Allen and Mr. Edwards, is this. We all know, those of us that have been working on the ground, know that the victims are not getting anything, except from places like Elam, who has probably broke their budget way beyond.
Okay.
So
yeah,
if the uptake is doing a Northside project, where's their follow-up to these people sitting at the table collecting the money, to what they're doing with the money to give to the victims? Or are they using the victims in this project to help fill the coffer more for the NCRT group? Just a question.
Okay, Terry, if Ms. Edwards, if I could, I'd like to start out and answer some of that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the uptake actually received a grant to do that.
They did?
Because, yes, they did. Because that first day that Jacob Wheeler, that video that Mr. Zagiri from the Minneapolis Mirror is talking about, I'm actually in that video. And I make the statement that there was a storm in North Minneapolis long before the tornado.
Yes, you did.
And then that's it. Yeah, and they cut me off.
Yep.
Now, Mr. Edwards, the day that Jacob Wheeler came there to film that was a deal set up with a guy named Anthony Newby. They said, Anthony called me and said, Jacob Wheeler wants to talk to you about the tornado and the victims and what's going on. So if you remember, Mr. Edwards, this guy came up with a video camera, and Louis Stark King started the meeting. I was in back being interviewed by this guy. And
okay,
I was posing some really hard questions about the tornado and the recovery effort.
And you
and
did,
what
Don,
they did
because
was,
I
yeah,
listened. And for them to only do the 3 seconds, shame.
Yeah, and so what they did, Mr. Edwards, and Terry knows, is they made a video loop which everyone's saying, it had Al Flowers in it wrestling on unconsciously. And they made a video that said, oh, we're putting aside our differences and we're all going to work together and this is going great, when that is not the case. And so I actually have an email and a call in to Mr. Wheeler, because I need to find out, okay, you got a grant to do this North Minneapolis project. I know that you've got Mr. Anthony Newby involved. But Anthony Newby is at the point where he's really upset because, you know, they're not really telling the whole story. And if you know the uptake, they're a very liberal kind of mainstream video kind of organization. And they're trying to show positivity and ignore the underlying current or the reality in this case.
Well, here's the thing that bothers me about that, and for the purpose of transparency, they were recommended by a person to interview me, and I interviewed with them over the phone and spent really 30 minutes of my good time and important time talking about the history of North Minneapolis locations and et cetera. And I always had the feeling that the white boy was overwhelmed, if you will, by the information, and that's not what he really wanted. And so I just felt that it was a waste of history. But I don't know how folks can talk about working together, because the caller that we have on right now has been the subject of some of the most abusive and outrageous conduct directed against her. She has been threatened. She had her camera confiscated per se. She has been told that she cannot photograph or record anything that goes on in the meeting. She was threatened by Al Flowers, if you will. She was threatened by other individuals. And yet when the question was posed about, you know, some form of reconciliation, folks refer to this caller, who is a journalist and is the the lead person for the Minneapolis Mirror. She was told that if she could come into the meeting, but if she stepped any way out of line, that she would be forcibly removed by security personnel. Now, I don't know how that's working together. And you and I both, Mr. Allen, have been told by Mr. King on occasion that we could not ask questions and et cetera, which has led to near confrontations. We've seen victims coming. Now, on the other side of the aisle are this whole group of people who are very comfortable with the kind of disdain and disrespect that has been shown, some at a very dangerous level, because they all expected and anticipated to get some money. But I don't know Terry that well. I mean, I've seen her, spoke to her, but I think it's important that the general public know that she has been sanctioned, if you will, threatened, if you will, and her press rights and the right of the Fourth Estate have been violated. I mean, she's told she cannot bring a camera in there, or she will be physically assaulted. Now, I have her. I mean, if you're still there, Terry, am I misstating what has happened to you?
Well, no. I mean, they threatened legal action against me, but my response is I'm just putting up more, because the truth needs to be told of what's going on. And if they have nothing to hide, then there shouldn't be an issue. More importantly, I sat in there openly and videotaped these meetings. I didn't go in there under any false pretenses. It's not my fault that they're figuring out how to steal the money and not getting it to the victims.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to be clear. And by the way, though, I mean, I have to correct you on one thing. You were told, as were any others that fit the category, that you would be physically removed, and that was when Mr. King made the statement that if you do not comply, that you will be physically removed by personnel. So, you know, you were given the message.
Well, and that's correct. And also they've made it quite clear with the group there that their message is going to be controlled and by permission only. And
yes.
Needless to
that
say, I'm not a part of
day.
That group.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Michelle? I appreciate it, Terry, for you taking the time to call us and to clarify.
Like I say, I just wanted to bring up that other portion of the uptake, because I think it's sad that they're using victims, and then in the next breath they've got the mayor sitting up there saying how they're all working together. Well,
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yes.
And, Don, you were in the video, and they just cut you out, too.
He had asked me, well, what is my feelings about the tornado recovery? And, you know, I'm a carrying somebody's BI. telling, you know, what I think, my opinion. And I really thought that the folks would be kind of investigating and putting out some truth mm-hmm. about what's happening. And mm-hmm. it's not what they did, because what they did, they took 3 seconds where I said there was a storm in North Minneapolis long before a tornado. And then, bam, they go on to all this. Like, I was meant that was sunshiny and great, you know? So.
Wow. All right, by the way, one other thing, Mr. Allen, because I know I have seen in the past, over the last number of years, I've seen Terry in the mirror at a number of homicides and et cetera. I just want to indicate for the record that an African-American, 26-year-old African-American, was shot at 13th and Oliver a couple nights ago, and I have reason to believe that he is deceased, that he died while on route to the hospital. I am shocked, and I have to let Terry and others of the alternative media know, I am absolutely shocked by the fact that there has been no publication, there was no TV coverage, and et cetera, of this African-American. Now, I will not say the death of this African-American, though I am extremely close to saying it, because I observed him as he was being placed in the ambulance. I was later told by reliable sources that he basically was gone. I am just stunned that there was no report anywhere of the shooting of this young man at the corner of 13th and Oliver on Wednesday night at 11:20 p.m. I just, you know, the listening audience needs to know. Terry, you and others in the alternative media need to know. A lot of people are being shot and killed in this city. It's no longer being reported.
Well, can I interject here for a second to bring up something else that's not being followed up on, considering they're talking about every other body they're pulling out of the river and the lakes?
Right. Yeah.
There is absolutely no follow-up to the body that they pulled up out of the Mississippi River over the 3rd Avenue Bridge in Minneapolis a week ago. It would have been a week ago last Wednesday. And this happened, the body was pulled just a little over 24 hours after the police had a squad car shot up. So,
and they maintained that they had detained a suspect in the vicinity of downtown, and the Minneapolis Police Department and the city of Minneapolis have not been able to identify the person that was taken into custody or their whereabouts. And, yes, Terry, I have to indicate that some of us firmly believe that that individual that was found in the river, execution-style shot in the head, was very well the individual who was apprehended allegedly by the police after a terrorist allegedly fired on a Minneapolis patrol car in the vicinity of Lowry and Penn. And we use the word terrorist, Mr. Allen, on this one, because that was a statement made in a press release by Inspector Mike Martin calling for his troops to take decisive action in protecting, quote-unquote, the cause, if you will. And I'm very puzzled, because this is about the third shooting / homicide of an African-American, which is not being reported. And yet we get all kinds of powder puff pieces from the Star Tribune talking about crime is down.
and I need to clarify, the reason it bothers me is that they have named every other victim in the last 2 weeks that has drowned or body has been found floating, except for this one found in downtown Minneapolis.
Less than 24 hours after a Minneapolis squad car containing two officers came under fire, was it hit at least 3 times by what Inspector Mike Martin said were black gunmen, black terrorists. Yes.
So just a question. Maybe somebody can provide answers. I keep putting the question up on the Minneapolis Mirror and still. You know, do we know if it's a man, if it's a woman? What was the cause of death? Was it accidental, suspicious, what?
Yeah. Well, I renew that. I hope that you will join us here with respect to the question of the African-American shot and gunned down in the street at 13th and Oliver.
Absolutely.
In the middle of this past week. 26-year-old African-American, no information whatsoever on him.
Well, I'll see what I can follow up with.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Throw that number out there one more time, Mr. Allen, if you would. Maybe someone will call and tell us about the shooting at 13th and Oliver. And by the way, again, don't waste our time here, because this columnist, this journalist, was at the scene saw the person being loaded into the ambulance, saw the homicide detectives, I even know who they were, and et cetera. And yet there is some suspicion now that this person was shot execution style as a continued retaliation by Minneapolis police against the alleged firing on Minneapolis police almost a week earlier. I mean, these are very uh-huh. serious kinds of situations.
Yeah, that number is 877-572-4288. Again, that number, toll-free number, is 877-572-4288. Give us a call. Moving on from there, Mr. Edwards, I understand. I'm just getting some news that are you familiar with this? You might be. Someone just sent this to me in the chat room. Northside house blows up and two critically burned and one survived and someone died.
One lady has died. There doesn't seem to be a lot of information about this situation other than initially the energy company or the gas company was saying that there appeared to be the odor of gas, whatever that was supposed to mean. Both women were horribly burnt. Kudos, if you will, to the neighbors who did everything they could to put out the flames and save them. But, yes, I'm aware that one of the female victims has expired.
Yeah, and you know, we're just not – I received an email last week from Matt McKinney because they had talked about the settlements. You know, Matt McKinney, Star Tribune reporter. They had a story article last week on the different settlements that the city of Minneapolis has been paying out, like the Dominic Felder and – and I knew Dominic Felder was on there, but it was really strange to see journalist, education journalist, columnist Corey Mitchell's name on it. And
yes,
so, you know, I like to rib him every now and then. So I says, hey, you know, why aren't you guys talking about Dominic Felder? And of course, Corey Mitchell sends me the link with the page of Dominic Felder being mentioned in his settlement. You know, I knew it was already there. I just, you know, when you go fishing, sometimes you catch those big 17-inch long, 4-pound northerns, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And so that's kind of interesting. But to make my point, Mr. Edwards, like you said, there are people getting shot, robbed, stabbed, beat, cut. I mean, stabbed and cut, same thing. But in North Minneapolis, well, across the city, especially in downtown Minneapolis, after the bars closed. And
oh, some of the most significant numbers of stick-ups, carjacks, assaults, and et cetera are happening in the warehouse district and all back and through the downtown area. And like I said, you keep getting the reports, these powder puff reports by the Star Tribune through the police department indicating that crime is down. And you're absolutely correct, by the way, on the settlements of lawsuits. You know, one of the settlements that they made sure they stayed away from, though they tried to pretend it was just about victims, was the settlement with black police officers for discrimination and bias in the police department. You would have thought that would have been noteworthy because it took place on the watch of Chief Tim Dolan.
Okay. Oh, hey, Mr. Edwards, I think we can hear this now. The press conference with GOP presidential hopeful reacts to the Standard & Poor's rating.
No, let's hear it.
Here we go.
Standard & Poor's is cutting the credit rating of the world's largest economy from AAA to AA+. The White House stayed silent in the immediate aftermath of the downgrade. Republican presidential candidates campaigning in Iowa had plenty to say. The standard moment for the United States of America, but it's a reflection of the trouble that the country's in. It's a reflection of the failed leadership of President Obama. It's a real blow to the American economy, to our future status in the world, and the President needs to be held accountable for it. The unprecedented cut to the U.S. AAA rating by a major ratings agency comes just 15 months before the next presidential election. The downgrade and the nation's debt are certain to be the top issues in the debate. Paul Chapman, Reuters.
Okay,
that was Reuters reporting from Europe,
as
I understand it, which is interesting, though we're looking at, in studio here, we're looking at one of our monitors, CNN. Ever since we have in the last 45 minutes, CNN has been talking about nothing but the downgrade, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to hear the statement by Republican contenders in Iowa, because the downturn this started long before Barack Obama even went to the United States Senate. You know what I mean? And so I'm fascinated. But the commentator, Mr. Allen, was absolutely correct. This is going to be a major sledgehammer being hit at the head of Barack Obama and his efforts to receive a second term, if you will. And it's going to be amazing the kind of things that have been said. You know, some of the Tea Parties have already, a congressman out of Colorado, have already referred to Barack Obama as a black tar baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm working on a piece on that right now. That was the last straw for me, Mr. Edwards. I'm working on a piece called Tar Baby, The Racist Rhetoric of the Republican Right.
Yeah.
And so, because that's not the first time. If you remember Representative Snow talking to Condoleezza Rice in those terms, calling her tar baby back in 2003, I think it was.
That's right.
And she didn't take really, he was fired immediately. So
yeah, they had to. Yeah, they had to. Yeah. And by the way, just in the last week, to the credit of those African American leaders that will still stand up. A former press secretary who's got some kind of program, I think on Liberty Broadcasting or et cetera, said to Al Sharpton, "What do you think about what your boy has done?" Referring to the president of the United States. And, man, I got to tell you, Al Sharpton got in his behind, okay? Mm. And one of the first things that Al Sharpton said is that, first of all, what the heck are you talking about, my boy? First of all, this man is my president. He's your president. He's president of the United States. What do you mean referring to him as my boy? I don't understand that kind of conversation. And it's just a part of the kind of lackadaisical disrespect that I see mounting in the United States as it pertains by the white population towards African Americans and others. And I just have to tell you, Mr. Allen, I think that 2012 is going to be a rather violent year in this country. I hate to say I hate to make that prediction. But it's going to be a period of violence. I know for a fact that the extreme right wing are in training in Idaho and Nebraska, as I first reported many months ago. And there are some plans afoot that are extremely frightening. But on the other side, it appears that the left is gearing up. And I think we're just going to have a level of violence that is going to be shocking and that we have not seen since the 1960s. In black America. So I hate to say that, if you will. By the way, just on a quick sports note, I see the folks all pumped up. Donovan McNabb has come aboard as the next old age quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. And the NBA, I don't think, Mr. Allen, if you're a basketball fan, I know you're not big on the sports thing, but if you're a basketball fan, don't look forward to any NBA in 2011-2012. Ain't going to happen.
Oh, wow. Oh,
and we were lucky to get the NFL situation. And on the other hand, I think that basically the players kind of decided they had to come back because the least of them, because basically 80% of the NFL players basically make $1 million or less. And people say, well, that, what kind of money is that? Well, first of all, Uncle Sam gets 47-48% of that. People tend to forget that. And so these players would, out of $1 million, depending on deferred payments and et cetera, may walk away with $130,000-$140,000 a season, you know what I'm saying? And when you talk in terms of the physical hardships, particularly with brain damage and et cetera, the first thing a brother better do is buy him some health insurance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right away.
Oh, yeah. With the brain injuries and et cetera. So, just on the sports scene, because I've said this to you before, a number of weeks ago. You see, we need sports in America to keep us pacified.
Yeah.
Okay. We need to be able to sit in front of that TV and rant and rave about who dropped the pass, who didn't catch the ball, who missed the tackle, who shot the jump shot, who shot the three pointer, and et cetera. Because God knows you don't want Americans talking about the incompetency of America government. Okay?
You
don't want them talking in terms of what a disaster this Congress has turned out to be. But in the process, I'm not sure, Mr. Allen, that the average American will be able to distinguish between who was the failure and who tried to get things done. And I think that's where Barack Obama is in trouble. I think he's in big trouble.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And on that note, Mr. Edwards, I just want to make an announcement here. This coming Saturday, August 13th, I know we talk here about a lot of things going on in the state of Minnesota, in the city of Minneapolis, Twin Cities in general, and part of that is politically driven. And it's unfortunate in my eyes that we haven't figured out as a group of people or a community to try to get people in office that represent our interests. So I'm always complaining. I've always been a critic of the elected officials. And I said in 2011 and 2012, I'm taking President Obama off the table. I'm not talking about President Obama. Okay, I'm dealing here locally in the Twin Cities, the 4th District and the 5th Congressional District of Minnesota. And so what we're doing starting next week on Saturday, August 13th at 10:30 a.m. at Sunnyside Restaurant on the corner of Morgan and Glenwood in North Minneapolis is we're having a town hall meeting. And we want people that are interested in talking about political infrastructure, vetting candidates that will speak on the citizen candidates on behalf of the people. And my goal is, Mr. Edwards, is to do a better job in the Council of Black Minnesotans. Okay.
Okay. So you're kind of doing a more positive the political agenda for the village, right?
Yeah. It's going to be. I mean, it's going to be a different. It started off kind of to the right, and I said, you know what? We need to pull everybody in to the table. I said the Republicans have their little diversity task force, which is a room full of white folks. And so that's kind of scary. The Democrats, they have their thing, and they're just as bad as Republicans. So at some point, we as the people have to come in and decide if we're just going to use this two-party system or three-party system or four-party system or whatever, we have to decide and make sure that the people that we vet forward listen to us, that they listen to the community. Because like we said earlier, Mr. Edwards, Congressman Ellison, Congresswoman Betty McCulloch, State Representative Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden, Senator Linda Higgins, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Mayor R.T. Ryback, Don Samuels, and the rest of the city council, when they receive the factual information on their desks that the Minnesota Department of Transportation only spent $715 with the black community in the whole state of Minnesota,
Out of 68 million,
there should have been a domino effect of press conferences.
But
There wasn't a domino effect of press conferences in the black organizations in the community because, you know, they got paid off. So,
that's what white politicians and white movers and shakers say. Well, if, you know, if your people, and they laugh when they say, you know, if your people weren't concerned, gentlemen, why do you expect us to be concerned? And let me say this to you. I mean, right now there's a greater interest in making sure that the Vikings get a stadium than there is about the fact that out of $68 million in specially allocated federal dollars for highway construction to the Department of Transportation, that the African-American community, professional, quote-unquote, community, got $715. I mean, there's more interest in, you know, we need to work. Oh, and by the way, let me just cut in. That's a part of the plan that I understand is at play. We will be told what we were told back early in the winter by the two black state representatives out of Minneapolis, that there are going to be all these jobs when they start building the new Viking Stadium, that there are going to be all these jobs for black folk. Let me tell you, Mr. Allen, first and foremost, organized labor, who is in desperate straits right now, no way in the world they're going to do anything but respect those white construction workers who are still on the bench, haven't worked for months, and et cetera, they will come first. I don't know, and this is my question to the Council on Black Minnesotans, what kind of legal recommendations are they going to make to the governor to make sure that African Americans get included in the equation and not run headlong into legal restrictions and confinement? And the reason I say that, the word is already out that basically all the major white general contractors in Minnesota, particularly on road construction and et cetera, based on just what happened last night that we had been talking about, that they're going to ask for a quote-unquote reduction in the percentage of set-asides as it pertains to the hiring of W and MBEs. In other words, women and minority business enterprises. And, by the way, on September 1st, a new policy will come into play, advanced by Ms. Velma Corvell in the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. And that's why I'm amazed that folks were sitting up in that meeting that you went to this past Thursday, not understanding that they are an endangered species. It will be tougher, and we repeat this again, it will be tougher for African-American contractors and now subcontractors to receive contracts from the city of Minneapolis. You see, they didn't stand up for themselves, Don. They didn't read the fine print. They didn't come to the hearings, and they don't know that Velma Corvell and Mayor R.T. Ryback wiped them out.
Yeah, totally, totally wiped them off the map.
Yeah. With the new with the new program and policy that was embraced quietly by the city council, it will be almost impossible in this city for an African-American to receive consideration and be awarded contracts for business being conducted by the city of Minneapolis, which now is telling African-American tornado victims as it pertains to damage and down trees and et cetera that the city is broke. Now, at the top of this program, we reported here that yesterday, very quietly, the Minneapolis City Council ordered that non-union employees accept a four-day work week and a 20% pay reduction. And yet there was nothing in this morning's paper, unless I'm totally – maybe I got a different version of the Johannesburg Times, but there is nothing in there. And that means that Velma Corvell, Johnny Burns, Kip Brown, and the clown for the Minneapolis for the Civilian Review Authority, that they're going to have to find a way to maintain and staff the office because they will not be able to work any more than 4 days a week. Of course, they don't come to work anyways, but I just think we want to make sure that we're clear on that, that is what has happened just the last 24 hours. I mean, it is unbelievable, man.
No, it's going crazy. So it's about 5:22. We have a few more minutes left here, Mr. Edwards. You're going to be on tomorrow, Blog Talk Radio, at 3 p.m. on Black Focus.
And we're going to be talking about the combination of the collapse of America's rating, if you will, the decision by Standard & Poor's to reduce that, which will cost the American taxpayers billions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands or millions, but it will cost you billions of dollars. We'll be talking about that, and we will be trying to get update on this military defeat in Afghanistan, where 22 of them being elite American special forces were killed in a raging conflict in the northeastern corner of Afghanistan. So we'll be talking about that. TV, we're talking about, thought you'd like this, the TV program tomorrow. We talk about the fact that there are no jobs.
Oh, yes. None.
President, how will you provide and how will you make this happen? There are no jobs. And we go into great detail. We just don't say it as a slipshod. We go into basically 40 minutes of analyzing just how bad a shape we're in as a nation.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Mr. Harris, one thing I'd like to say, too, is the stimulus money back in 2009 that was meant to stimulate the economy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at where they would have been better off giving the stimulus money to Apple, because Apple would have probably employed about 2 million people across the United States. Now,
absolutely.
Since the stimulus money has been given, hundreds of thousands of jobs in the private sector lost each month while the government grows 40%. I'm talking about hiring, contracts, agreements. And here in Minnesota, we have, our Minnesota Department of Transportation has a what do you call that, little retreat, and pays a guy close to $17,000 for a half-hour speech about Harley-Davidson Company.
Yeah.
You know, I
yeah.
said, I come on, what's going, what's up with that? And there's people that got, if they want to learn about Harley-Davidson, you know, they didn't give me half that. I would have read the book and went over there and told them. So,
yeah,
but,
there's
some crazy stuff going on. There's some crazy stuff.
Yes, it is, Don. And like I said, again, we are repeating our request to the Council on Black Minnesotans and to its leadership. We would certainly like to ask them to join us on the air next Saturday for at least a half-hour discussion about what their plans are, what their thinking is, in advising the governor of the state of Minnesota, Democratic Governor Mark Dayton, on how we will get a significant jobs project moving that will put African Americans, who are always at the bottom of the totem pole, by percentage, we are the greatest number of people unemployed, if you will, underemployed. We're asking, if you will, the Council of Black Minnesotans to join with us in an open discussion. We will open the phone lines, if you will. If people have questions or critical of us or the process. But, you know, Don, I've always said this. I'm a person that lives by this particular doctrine, and that is I'd like to know what's the plan, okay?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
You talked about the barbershop incident. There is far, far too much of that going on in a city, in a metropolitan area that declares itself to be one of the thought centers, number one of the world, and one of the economic giants of the world by virtue of the major corporations that operate and have their home bases here in the state of Minnesota or in the Twin Cities, okay? We had a little, what seemed to be a little company down south west of us, which are doing so well down there in southwestern Minnesota that they were able to purchase Southwest Airlines. Now, come on, man. So somebody's doing well here, okay?
Yes.
And yet a report comes out like the disparity study in October of 2010, and the white folks in Austin, Texas, who had been studying this for 5 years at a cost of $500,000 to the taxpayers of Minneapolis, it's as equally bad as the $715. And they said, black folk don't get jobs in Minnesota. And by the way, the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has been lying to you, city council, and to the general public, because they do not go out and examine the sites to see that the law is being followed. And you and I talked about last year. Nothing.
Yeah,
no one cared. Everybody's like, yeah, well, we don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. I agree
100%. Yeah.
I
got to say very quickly, we have African-Americans being shot and killed in this city. It's not being reported. 13th and Oliver. Sad situation. Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Okay, with that said, Mr. Edwards, we have a lot of feed here from CNN about the Special Forces troops killed in Afghanistan. I guess we could close with that because it might run a little bit over 2 minutes.
All right, go ahead.
Here we go. Hopefully they don't have commercial with it.
So with new details just in, we now know what these Navy SEALs were doing when they flew into this remote area of eastern Afghanistan, an administration official confirming the SEALs were on a mission to try and rescue other troops. They were functioning as what the military calls a quick reaction force, moving into these remote mountains to try and help out another unit that had been pinned down in a firefight and needed help. As you say, 31 Americans dead in this helicopter incident. Of those, 25 were U.S. Special Forces, 22 of them, Joe, U.S. Navy SEALs. The majority of the SEALs came from the same unit that sent the SEALs in to the Osama bin Laden raid in Pakistan earlier this year. But several sources are telling us that the military has run a check on all of the names and that none of the killed in action today were on the bin Laden raid themselves. This, however, shaping up to be one of the most tragic days, not just for the U.S. military, but for the special operations community, which has really been carrying a very heavy combat load in eastern Afghanistan, doing these raids, doing these missions, day after day, night after night. Joe?
That was Barbara Starr, by the way. Mr. Allen recognized her voice. CNN special correspondent to the Pentagon. Interesting statement.
Yeah, okay. And we'll be back soon. same time next week at 4 p.m. We look forward to it for you to tune in. And Mr. Edwards, good day.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.